Channel 9 News. We're coming to you live today from outside Rivera Asylum, where authorities have confirmed that mass murderer Stanley Elk escaped earlier today.
Welcome to the Dead Harvey Podcast. This is Brad Paulson. Today, very happy to have with us filmmaker August Aguilar. Did I pronounce your last name right?
It's actually Aguilar, but
Aguilar. Okay.
I get it mispronounced all the time.
Okay. Well, great to have you with us. This is like really fun stuff that you sent us here. Movie's called He Comes to Kill, and it's basically about a Michael Myers type of lunatic that escapes from an asylum that sort of reminded me of like Arkham Asylum in the first place. He sort of looks like a mix between, to me, Cousin It, Rob Zombie from Hellbilly Deluxe, and then the Vault Keeper. So, it was cool. And like after watching this, I was like, next time I go to a mechanic, I'm going to be careful because these killers are always wearing this uniform, especially like the copycat killers. And not only is this about Stanley Elk, who is this Michael Myers style of killer, but it's about his toadies. Now, I think it's kind of about, to me, it feels like it's almost about this wave of like lunacy that he creates around him, like this cult of devotees, these toadies that carry on his message and are very, and I'm like, will do anything to make him happy. So I thought that was a very cool approach to it. So tell us about kind of like how you came up with this movie, what your inspiration for it was, and what your plan of it is, if you have any like sequels in mind or.
Sure, man. Yeah. I mean, and thanks. You hit it spot on as far as like everything you just described. I mean, it's as described by somebody else, but it is like my love letter to Halloween. John Carpenter is like pretty much my biggest influence. Halloween is my all time favorite horror movie in general. And, but you know, this original draft and the idea, was kicking around with a buddy of mine, David Brandon. We were kicking around this idea, but I always knew I just wanted to be kind of like my version of Halloween, you know, Michael Myers.
Yeah.
So Stanley Elk, which that name came way later. I just knew, you know, I kept thinking of Michael Myers, Freddy Krueger, Jason Voorhees. They all had kind of like simple but creepy names, and
somehow
Stanley Elk just kind of came online, and that's how we came up with the character. And of course, that mechanic suit is definitely like inspired by Michael Myers. Didn't want to have it the same color, you know. I just wanted to have a different version of that. It had some zippers on it, so it made it a little different. But yeah, you hit it right on the head with that, and then. But what I like about He Comes to Kill is it's really not so much about Stanley Elk. Like it is, like it centers around him and everything, but it's really about the characters kind of dealing with Stanley Elk coming into town, escaping this asylum. Mm-hmm. And because you've got every kind of character in this movie, as far as like being afraid of Stanley Elk, who are not afraid of Stanley Elk, who love Stanley Elk and everything like that. Yeah. And the cult following aspect is something I really didn't really discover until later, as far as like after I casted my actors and everything. Like the original draft, the third draft of everything, is completely different from what the final version is now. I was rewriting this thing over and over and over again. And when I casted Jordan Fraley, who plays Mark, he's the copycat killer of Stanley Elk. Me and him, once we kind of talked and kind of just really discovered, like tapped into a really dark place with this character, it just kind of clicked to me, man, there's people who need to, like, you know, become Stanley Elk, kill for Stanley Elk, and who are happy to die by Stanley Elk. So this cult aspect really, I think, paves the way for a really dark backstory, current timeline and future of the movie. And I think it's interesting just to kind of see that there's all these different maniacs running around who are doing things in his name and everything like that. So the whole movie, like I said, is just like focused around that, pretty much like this aftermath of his escape. And some people are terrified and some people are celebrating. And there's definitely plans as far as a future goes. So Stanley Elk, like, this is there's a moment in the movie where you kind of hear where he's like, once he's done with Sandpoint, just wait till the world, you know.
Right. Yeah.
Deals with Stanley Elk and us, because they're Legion. And that's something I want to play with. And there's definitely ideas as far as that goes. My idea, I mean, if I had my dream come true, it would be a franchise as far as like a Michael Myers or Freddy Krueger or Jason Voorhees. I mean, this is like my slasher franchise I'd love to push forward. And there's definitely like a lot of ideas for part two that I'm really excited about. So.
Yeah, and I like that a lot of it was left ambiguous too, which is what I think really works about the first Halloween. When you hear John Carpenter talk about how he wasn't very happy with the initial Halloween Rob Zombie remake, it's because he explored too much of like what it was like as a kid, what was making him evil. He's like, no, he's just evil. And that's kind of like, and that's the sense I got with this one, is like, it's just this evil presence. You don't know whether he's supernatural. There's something that compels him to, or there's something that compels other people to be drawn to him, mm-hmm. either afraid of him or devoted to him. But I think that's cool to leave it ambiguous and then to leave it open for whatever you want to do in the future with it. But it does kind of, it felt to me like those Rob Zombie ones, even though I enjoyed, well, I enjoyed the first one a lot, not the second one, but the delving into it too much takes some of the mystique out of it. But I think that's what you did really well with this, is left it open to interpretation. And I think it also makes the villain more creepy when you do that too.
Yeah, for sure. And that's, a lot of my films kind of have that same style where you'll see like a presence, you'll see a character or an idea, but it's really kind of up to the audience to figure out what that backstory is. Why are they doing this, and what's going to happen after they end up watching the full movie? So with He Comes to Kill, it's very much in the vein of all my formulas with short filmmaking. But Stanley Elk is, and I have a backstory in mind as far as who he is and stuff like that. And I think there is kind of like this weird supernatural presence to add along to that. Like, it's almost like he grows stronger by the more people who love him and follow him and stuff like that. But there's also like this, he was and is just a man. Like, he's just like this kind of guy who pretty much had a really screwed up childhood and built into like an evilness, and has become this thing over the years, and got locked away for a while for doing some really horrific things. And then once he's out, his mind is, brain, everything is programmed within him just to follow his natural evil instincts and stuff like that. So there's definitely like a humanity side that I'd like to actually explore in part two, which is something I have really on the agenda with that. But there's also just kind of like he said, like this unknown essence about him that I really think that it's powered by the fear and love of this character within this world.
Yeah, that's cool. It's almost like it turns into a force in and of itself once it carries on to other people. Yeah. And it almost gives you a feeling like he may be operating on autopilot as well, too. Yeah. So that's interesting. There's a lot of things you can draw into it, which I think is great about like the way that it's set up. And I think that's why always people are still talking about David Lynch stuff, because he's like, I'll never actually tell people what I think it is. Yeah. He's like, I know what it is, but I'm not going to tell people.
I definitely like to play with audience's imagination and perspectives, you know, because I might think one thing, but I've heard, whenever I explain it, I'll hear something completely different. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. You think like, you know, you saw it that way. And I'm like, it was really intended just to kind of either be this simple or this way. But with this one, I mean, like I said, it evolved pretty much the entire way through making it, but I like that it became to this point where you can watch it for what it is, but you can really just try to dive into figuring out like why and who and everything about it, as far as even just the background characters, because these characters who are fans of Stanley Elk killing and praising him and trying to become copycats of him, it's like you almost kind of wonder, well, why are they even being this way and stuff like that? And, and what is the future of all these people living in this insane person's vein, you know? So what's going to happen with Stanley Elk after as well?
Yeah. And actually, like, aside from Elk, like the compelling, like franchise character that he is, and I think he's got a lot of potential for a franchise villain. I enjoyed actually the side characters quite a bit because I watched it a couple times, and when I did it on the repeating viewings, it had like more like the charm was like was setting into me. And I think this happens when there's because like the side characters, they take a lot of moments where I could tell that you as a writer were enjoying, like just having fun, letting them go on like rants and stuff. And that's just hilarious. And like the, there's a lot of very entertaining side characters in the movie. So there's almost like these little scenes in the movie that kind of serve as like their own kind of shorts, but yeah, they all connect to the storyline. But I thought that was really fun. Like some of the other rants the characters are doing, I was just laughing at. Like there's one guy that's a horror host in it named Hack, I think.
Yeah.
And he's getting upset because like nobody wants to give him a ride. He's like, damn it, I had this autograph signing and at Dick's Discount Auto Repair. But it, there was lines like that. It was just making me crack up.
Oh, man. He was hilarious to work with. So Hack, Tony Covington, he's Hack the horror host. And he's actually, you know, in Knoxville area, he's definitely like one of the celebrity guests around here. He does a bunch of horror conventions and everything like that. So I've been friends with him for a while. He's been a big fan of the work. And whenever I was, you know, getting this film together, he was like, is there anything I can do to be a part of this? And we had this idea about the ending of just kind of like this random person and kind of leading off with that. And I was like, well, there is this thing at the end. I'll just let you do whatever you want to do with it and have fun with it. And man, I just let him do this complete ad-libbing, you know, monologue at the end. It was so funny. I could not stop laughing just watching it and everything.
Yeah. Oh, he was great. Oh, he was totally cracking me up. Awesome. And then especially like how, like his delivery was just great because he was so serious about it. It just made it so much more comical. But yeah, there's lots of great stuff like that. What else are going to say? Oh, I wanted to ask you about this. White Lavender Jones.
Yeah.
White Lavender Jones is awesome. He's this character that shows up. He's kind of like, he raps like Grandmaster Flash. Yeah. And there's all these bizarro characters in the background. One character in a chicken suit dancing around. And when he gets attacked, I appreciated this. There's a squawking noise that he makes.
Yeah.
The absurdity of it is just great. Like mixed in with this kind of like crazy, sort of like, I mean, when it goes to the killer, like that stuff is serious when he's slaying people, but the side character stuff, it's this weird kind of like mix between them, but it makes it great. And it's also, he was super entertaining. Now, is he like a local celebrity or is he, where did you find out about him?
Oh man. So White Lavender Jones, you can find him on Facebook. You can find him on YouTube. He's an actual musician. He's a rapper, but his name is Bruce Tharp. And I actually connected with him, over Facebook a few months ago. We just somehow I think a mutual friend of ours somehow connected us, and he was a fan of Strange Films, and I was a fan of his work because his song You Don't Like Me, which is the song that plays in the movie, just like the music video is just wild, and you should definitely check it out if you get the chance on YouTube. But with hearing that song and watching that video, I was like, there's something about this guy that's
it's
just unique and interesting and entertaining, and just, he's got an image, he's got a look, right? And so we talked and we were pretty close through Facebook for a while. And then, again, kind of when the casting was happening, he reached out to me and was like, is there any way I can be a part of this movie? He's out in Texas. I'm in Knoxville, Tennessee. So I was like, the film called for a punk rock singer. It was just like a punk rock band, and they're doing practice, and Stanley Elf walks by and, you know, kills a punk rock singer. But when White Lavender Jones reached out and was wanting to be a part of the movie, I was like, I can get you in the movie, but you got to come here. You know, I can't expect this, and I've got everything working here. I'll be there. And I said, all right. So I wrote the whole scene based around White Lavender Jones in a party, like a house party with him in it. And I rented out a house that I invited as many people as I possibly could. I made it Halloween themed, and I just was like, yo, everyone dress up. Half of it was my crew because, you know, how filmmaking goes, especially indie filmmaking, you invite 20 people that say they're going to come and five of them actually show up. And half of it was my crew. We just got everyone dressed up as best we possibly could. The chicken guy is my one of my best friends, John Cleary, my right hand man throughout the film. But dude, he was adamant about getting attacked in that scene. Mm-hmm. I said, "All right, fine." But when we did it, it was that natural instinct of me, like, I have to add that cluck sound just to make it that like you said, there's such an intense, serious tone throughout the film.
Yeah.
But you've got these sprinkle layers of like just humor and comedy and quirkiness and everything like that, which I think is an odd blend, but I think it's fun to watch and very entertaining. But while I was down, he brought it. He came full get up and I put his song on the background. He performed it and we had a little house party in the scene, and it was a lot of fun. And he's coming back down for the premiere of the movie this month.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. I actually stayed up watching YouTube videos of Jones.
Oh, yeah, he's awesome, man.
He's awesome. Oh, it's great. Oh, it's yeah. So super entertaining. Yeah, and he's a super fascinating character.
He is a really fascinating guy. And so if you notice in the movie, and this is stays true to his character in real life, he has three elements about him, which is the rapping, the music part of him, the wrestling, because he's actually like
a that's
grew up in the wrestling business, and he owned a wrestling company for a very long time. And I mean, he grew up with like all the all stars, you know, rappers that are not rappers, wrestlers that we know of. And then he's actually a magician as well. Yeah. So in the movie, I made sure that we incorporated all three of those elements. He does his music, he does wrestling moves in it, and he actually has a magic trick in there as well.
He actually shoots a fire out of his hands. Yeah. And he does it on the videos too. It's awesome. Oh, it's great. That's almost like a superpower like Gambit has or something.
Oh, it's wild. We set the fire alarm off.
Yeah. Oh, it's great. What was the other? Oh, okay. There was another guy, Chief Sanders. His character totally reminded me of Walton Goggins from The Shield. Was there any kind of influence to that at all?
I can definitely see that. We were actually going for more of, I can't remember the actor's name, but we referenced it multiple times, was Rob Zombie's Devil's Rejects, the sheriff.
Oh, okay.
Sheriff in that, where he's just like...
Oh, William Forsythe in that
We were kind of going for something like that. We both had that idea when we were trying to talk about this character. But I should say, Joe Castelline, who plays Chief Sanders, man, he came in, he brought that character to a completely different level than
he went kind of bad lieutenant with it.
Well, he was written as more of like a kind of like an uptight, you know, older chief that's been around for a while and whatnot. He, you know, a little bit of an asshole, but he's not like crazy. And but we had to film the last scene first before we shot the dialogue scenes and stuff. And when he came on set, you know, we hung out with him for a few hours and he was just Joe being nice and cool and everything. But then when he flipped on Chief Sanders, dude, it was a nut. I was like, what is going on here? I had no idea. But he made, with that performance, which was a lot of fun to watch, I ended up rewriting his scenes in the other shooting dates that we had, which takes place in the first and middle of the film, and made me allowed me to really open up that character even more, you know, because I was like, oh, this guy's like a washed up city cop who's on drugs or something like this guy.
Yeah, he's almost like you could see him easily become the villain if something different happened to him.
Yeah,
something pushed him over the edge. And I love characters like that, like that that are supposed to be the good guy, but could easily switch over to be the bad guy. Like the Punisher tells Daredevil, he's like, you're one bad day away from being somebody like me. But and what was interesting, I wanted to ask you about him too, is that when he starts out, he's not as obsessed and he's dressed all slothy. And then when the more obsessed he gets, the more professional he looks. So was that intentional as well too? Or?
Well, not quite as intentional as I wish it was. I like that you pointed that out, but it was actually, so he showed up, like I said, we shot the last scene first. So I told him just kind of like your standard detective looking outfit, you know. He showed up like that. And then when we came to shoot the other scenes that he was in, we shot both of them in the same day. And I was like, well, can you recreate that outfit for me? And he was like, well, I can't. I lost a tie here. I don't have a white shirt here, something like that. And I was like, all right, no worries. And he's like, well, I was thinking. And he was like, I was thinking, since I am kind of this like lazy, big city cop in a small town, maybe I should dress up in sweats. And I was like, oh, that's a kind of cool idea. Yeah. Make you look like you don't give a shit. Right. And, he, so he, so that's what we did. But then the second part where he has, he's doing the interrogation, he has a little bit more of a dressed up look on him. We just didn't have the white shirt. So he was, yeah. I was like, just wear something casual, like a nice, like an outfit. But that's why I added the line in there. He's like, you smell that justice on a new day. Cause it's
yeah.
the next day almost, you know, he's intended to go out, looking his best to take down Stanley Elk. But, yeah. I wish it was more thought out than that, but yeah, that kind of went down.
Maybe he just gets too many complaints from citizens when he goes out in sweatpants and forces.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Oh, so this is cool too. So I was looking at, so you have a website or you have a company called Strange Films.
Yeah.
And let's go to the website here, strangefilmstudios.com. Yes, and this is really cool because it's a multimedia company. Well, I'll let you explain it, but it's interesting because the logo, totally, I was like, oh, August is a very, like, he's probably seen some of the same movies that I have, because it kind of reminds me of Dark Castle and Full Moon. The Strange Films logo there. But it's got like a cool kind of horror movie and kind of pulpy vibe to it. But tell us about your company, how you started it, what your vision is for it.
Yeah. So Strange Films, I mean, I've been working on it since it came to be in 2016. And it just really started out with me making a horror film, like for the Knoxville Horror Film Festival. I saw there's an ad. I just moved to town, and I was working at the news at the time, and I saw that ad in the middle of the night, and I was like, whoa, this would be cool to make a horror movie. So I kind of pitched that idea with my dad, Frank Aguilar. He's based up in Philadelphia, where I'm originally from, and we wrote our first movie together called There's Something Down the Road, and we actually shot it together, and that's kind of how the whole process became. But I'm such a fan of pretty much everything as far as content goes, music, yeah. films, art, comics, everything. I just, every day I find something new I want to do. And that's kind of how Strange Films became a multimedia experience. So we may make a film, but we'll make that film and turn it to some really cool art designs, collectible art designs people can collect, or we'll make original soundtrack songs from our different artists that want to work with us, and we'll have like a few different songs that we can make, which we have a CD compilation of all different music we've had over the years. We'll take that movie and turn it into a comic book, you know. So these things that I'm just a fan of, I just ended up becoming or doing more and more. But it is definitely influenced by like 70s and 80s horror and everything. And my artist, Tim Spavero, he was the one who made that logo. And Dark Castle is one of the things he actually referenced to me when we first put that idea together. But I like it. It's got like a road going into like some woods, and I think
that's cool.
Such an ambiguous, image as well, because all of our films are like that. It's and Strange Films. It's technically I really wanted to go for like a Marvel shared universe cinematic experience. So all my films, not all of them are connected directly, but they're supposed to be able to like kind of exist in a shared universe. So some films do connect, cross over. There's references, to some other films and whatnot. But it's just definitely inspired by like 70s and 80s horror and directors and stuff like that. And I just like to have fun with it. And I really think that our work is unique and original, and just the characters, I think, are one of the biggest standouts of all our films. And He Comes to Kill is my newest thing. It's the longest project I've worked on. So it's 50 minutes long. It's like kind of a micro feature film. Everything else is like, the longest is 26 minutes. So everything else is short film format. But in the future, I would love to just be able to, whether it's independent or having someone help produce or a studio backing, I would love to just see Strange Films grow into kind of like your Blumhouse Studios, just like something for independent horror existing in like a shared universe, or just having anthology tales and franchises out of it as well. But I'd love to just kind of just see it grow and grow and grow, because we have a brand. I mean, we've got a lot of fans on Facebook and YouTube and everything that follow our work and who I get reached out to be, you know, who want to be a part of Strange Films. And it's just because I think we create not only interesting stuff, but we really, everybody who's involved with our work, we create like family, and we just have so much fun and give them creative freedom just as much as we're trying to express our own creative freedom as well.
Yeah, absolutely. The connected universe thing is really cool. And I think it's really important too, because you're thinking way far ahead. Mm-hmm. And this I think is really important for other filmmakers, indie filmmakers to do too, is kind of look at, so, because when I was looking at the website, I was like, there's really good marketing here. And there's a really good idea for what, for anything that could be done, like potential that could be done in the future and the crossover stuff. And this all started kind of like, you know, I first noticed the interconnected stuff before it started happening with the Marvel movies and in the View Askew Universe stuff. When I used to watch all the old school Kevin Smith 90s yeah. movies, and he had yeah. that View Askew Universe. And I was really fascinated by that interconnected world and like looking forward to like when the characters would show up. And I would get the comics they would do, like the Jay and Silent Bob comics, and those characters that would show up in other places or other movies would show up in like a scene in another movie they did, and in all types of media. And I think that's a really good idea to market yourself as an indie filmmaker, because you have so many things stacked against you as an indie filmmaker, especially doing micro budget stuff, to do like really entertaining characters and have an interconnected thing as a plan for everything going forward, I think is just great. And plus it also, and you have it thought out really well, because you got the merchandise on top of that in the comics. There's multiple different ways and directions that you could go in if one of them doesn't work out, and it just leaves it open for you to make everything work better. It just gives you so many more options than just like doing a movie and not having it connected to anything else, or not doing comics on the side. Or so it basically, it just increases your odds a lot better of making it, making it work.
And I found that actually one example of that working was whenever I made my first comic book, Cindy's Birthday Party. We made the film months before that. And, you know, I was like, oh, I want to adapt the film into a comic. That'd be really cool. And once I did that, and I was starting to sell it at comic book stores and at conventions and stuff, I ended up getting a whole new side of fan base coming from the comic books, because I had comic book readers, reading the film or reading the book. And then in the book, it's advertised at the end, watch the movie. Yeah. And there's a direct, you know, link or you know, whatever to find out where you can watch it. And I had people watching the movie after they read the comic book, and it was just kind of cool. I can tap into not only, like, if they're not into indie film right off the bat, it's more in the comics, I can introduce them to our indie films through our comic books, and same thing, you know, vice versa, whatever. But yeah, I mean, I just wanted to hit every avenue I possibly can. I'm still looking for things I can create, just because I'm a psycho, and I just I love working on all that stuff anyways. But there's definitely like Marvel or Kevin Smith. And actually, we're going to be at Kevin Smith's Film Festival at the end of the month.
Nice.
Yeah, with our film Raven. But, you know, that's just, I have like that indie film spirit, but I just have such a, like, a grand scheme of things I would love to just, you know, play out. And even in He Comes to Kill, there's a character in the party scene of White Lavender Jones, there's a character that's drinking beer pong, everything. He's actually, his name is the Royal Knight, and he actually pops up in a lot of different Strange films, and he has his own films as well. So there's like just little things, you know, if you watched him, you caught him, and you knew who he was, you're like, hey, that guy, like,
yeah,
he's in all the movies, you know, he's in all those other movies. So it's just one of those things that I love doing. I think it's fun to use your imagination and kind of world build. And people who actually follow along the journey, they appreciate it more.
Yeah. Also, no, it's great. It's right. And what it was weird too, because it kind of occurred to me, like, because you're a comic fan and I am as well too. I grew up reading comics. So it's like, I noticed this like way back when I first started reading comics. It was all interconnected. Like Marvel started out, and all those comics, they started out as all being interconnected, whether it was like Marvel or Valiant or Eclipse or DC or any of that stuff, or Image. All the worlds were interconnected with each other, and they were doing this way before giving us like a roadmap, but that didn't really take off as like an interconnected universe until they started recently doing the Marvel relaunches, when like the initial Iron Man came out, and then, you know, leading up to Civil War and Infinity War and all that. But I think that was really interesting. The comics have been doing that for a while. All the great ideas have been coming out of comics. They're they're probably my favorite medium of all. And sometimes they adapt them well, sometimes they don't. It always sort of irritates me on how much they leave on the floor for how many great ideas they could have taken from comics.
But
they were giving us this roadmap for interconnected entertainment. And surprising that it took so long for that to catch on to Hollywood. But I love seeing indie films doing this, because I really think it's a way to separate yourself and to make the world bigger on a lower budget.
Yeah, I grew up reading comics and you know, being just pretty much a big superhero fan in general.
Yeah.
Just knowing, like, there's all these characters who can pop up every once in a while. And, you know, like, there's these giant storylines or worlds that they exist in. It's like, that's always been really appealing to me. So even though most of our films are kind of standalones, it's just nice to know I've got a sandbox of characters and scenarios that I can, you know, if I think of the right idea, just put them together or have them cross paths at some point or something like that. And it's exciting. It's really exciting. And I try not to, like, force it, you know, when it comes to new ideas. I'm like, well, I have to connect it here or this and that. Like, but if the opportunity arises, I think it's a lot of fun and it can be really engaging and interesting.
Yeah, the interconnected world stuff is great. I remember, like, and I think it's a great way to, like, reward fans, because it hooked me from when I was reading comics. So it's like, okay, I got Spectacular Spider-Man, then I got Get Amazing Spider-Man, then I got Web of Spider-Man. All, like, these characters that are popular have, like, five of their own series, and then they cross over in other series. It's a brilliant way to just, like, totally hook people on getting, like, everything that they're involved with. But that was the same thing with, like, the view. And I think that's a way, like, that your fans can be like, oh, okay, so this side character I really dug, so now I got to get this and see how it ties into this. But yeah, it's a great way to weave everything in, expand the world. And it's also cool too, because you're doing in this one these big ideas of, like, how Stanley Elk could, you know, go into another area and essentially, like, take over the world or become bigger. So it's on a low budget with big ideas working really well.
Yeah, and it's exciting because, I that's just how I operate. I'm really ambitious in general, but when I write, I try to write in a way where it's like, I know I can physically film this. I know I can physically do this. If someone were to come in with some extra backing and help produce and, like, hey, let's elevate this, then we can get a little bit more crazy, or we can get a little bit even more ambitious. But I'll write pretty ambitiously still, just knowing the resources and locations and people I have to be able to tell the best story I physically can possibly do. And that excites me for even, like, with Stanley L going into maybe a bigger city for the next movie. It's like, all right, well, how do I amp up this small town feel to a bigger city, but still kind of keep it, you know, indie style and whatnot. So that's a challenge I'm really looking forward to exploring.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell us about, like, the challenges of making, because I think you're the only filmmaker that I've talked to that's making movies in Tennessee. So what's the indie film scene like that, and what kind of unique challenges happen in that area?
So Knoxville, Tennessee, there's actually a pretty big film scene here. We not only with independent filmmaking, but we actually, we're like one of the headquarters for, like, Discovery and stuff like that. Like, there's, like, a lot of different film production companies here that are constantly making TV shows and movies and whatnot. So it's actually really big, and as far as that film scene goes. So there's a lot of actors, there's a lot of people making movies and whatnot. I will say that's give or take, because it's, you know, you've got, like, those recreation or murder shows, you know, like,
right.
Tons of those. You got, so it's kind of its own category of actors and people involved with that. You got kind of cliques and stuff in this area, so it's interesting to kind of navigate through it. But there is a big pool of people in this area who are supportive of every kind of film and filmmaker and everything like that. So as far as that goes, that's fine. Most places and people are really cool about filming at their spots or finding your resource or location or something like that. So that's all right. In general, there's, like, when I do a casting call for crew and cast, especially, I have pretty good chances of getting everything I need out of it, because there's just so many people here. I just usually follow them through Facebook, like Facebook groups and whatnot. And over the years, I've built pretty much like a network, and People know Strange Films and my name around here too, so that's exciting. But yeah, it's not so bad. I think we get a bit of a challenge because we are like Tennessee, you know, and no one really kind of thinks of us as a filmmaking area or hub or anything like that, and whatnot. So, and when you're looking for to kind of maybe step up the talent and step up some things, you might have to pull from other surrounding areas. So like for this film, we actually had some Atlanta actors come in for that. We had, you know, obviously White Labrador Joe came from Texas and whatnot, yeah. But, most of the time, especially like the Ohio, Atlanta, Nashville area, stuff like that, there's people who want to they'll be willing to travel in Knoxville to help, shoot and everything like that. But I shoot a lot in Philadelphia as well. We have like, there's like three or four or five of our films that I've made up in Philly. So I'll fly up there and we probably have a bigger following up in Philadelphia than I actually do here in Knoxville. So it's really easy for us to get talent and crew up there as well. And that's like a big playground. It's a lot of fun filming in Philly because everyone's doing it and they're just like, yeah, sure. You know, they're used to seeing people film everywhere. You can just kind of walk the streets and shoot whatever. It's really cool.
Well, it's funny, like the more that time goes by, the less and less is actually getting made in Hollywood, and all these like and all these other areas are becoming their own versions of Hollywood. Like Austin, yeah. Texas has had a scene, Louisiana's had a scene for a while, like they film a lot of stuff in Shreveport, of course Canada. I'm in Montana, they're even starting to film stuff here now. Oh, wow. So it's crazy. Well, it's because of the show Yellowstone mostly, but yeah, it's interesting, especially since for the ability to do stuff remotely now. There was a film, you ever seen the movie Host that Rob Savage did? It was during the pandemic. He did it all on Zoom. So he was actually directing the movie without even being there. And oh, I thought that was pretty interesting. Actually,
well, that's really the cool one movie. Where they're like partying in the apartment. And I think maybe one like overdoses or something like that and they're freaking out or they think they overdose.
I think there's some that are similar titles, but this one is basically they're having a party, but it's like a Zoom party, so everybody's in different areas talking to each other and drinking on the computer, and then they decide to, you know, like, what do you decide to do when you have a party? Let's do a seance and make things dangerous. So they have this lady come in and do a seance. They conjure up a real spirit and it attacks them. But it's all, sometimes there'll be people that'll take the camera and so they'll take a laptop with them and walk around with it. So you can get like that found footage thing. The rest of it's like still shots on the Zoom cam or going back and forth between them. But it was cool, like the way he did like mostly practical effects and stuff too, but all directing remotely. But I think that's awesome. We're going to see really more neat. Of that. Yeah. And inspires kind of innovation, you know, when everybody's like trapped in one area and can't go anywhere.
Yeah. So. No, it's definitely the game has changed. I mean, you've got independent filmmaking now, and it's the best time to be one if you're
pursuing. I agree. Yeah, I agree.
Because you can literally film on your iPhone if you wanted to. We've got iPhones now who can make full feature movies, and that's proven to be successful for a lot of interesting filmmakers. But like I run just, you know, a GH5, a Panasonic GH5, and I've ran DSLRs for the last 6 years, and you can produce really high quality stuff with that kind of camera. I mean, I've worked with a few people who obviously can, you know, up that, but I mean, you don't have to have like a Hollywood budget and everything to make really good quality films. And now that we are doing remote stuff, like people can, if they know how to operate the tech or whatever it is, and they can film something and send it in, you can add that to your movie. I actually have a guy from UK, his name's Andy Walker. He actually filmed something remotely on his laptop for me. Because we have this little web series that we have on our YouTube channel, and I was looking for another host of one, and he actually filmed one for me and sent me all the footage, and I guess I just have to edit it now. But that's going to be its own little Strange Films web episode. And he was all the way in the UK. I mean, that's just cool that I was able to type up my direction that I wanted for it, and he filmed it on his own, and he shot it and sent it to me, and now I can just edit it and make it how it needs to be with all that footage. So it's definitely an exciting time for filmmakers, and you know, whether you're super low budget or you've got some cool opportunities or whatever, but like you can do it anywhere and with anyone, and it's really exciting. So
well, exciting also because I'm noticing a big hunger for it now for indie stuff. And especially because, you know, Hollywood, a lot of what's been coming out, they can't take any risks. So everything's getting very stale and multiple remix upon remix upon remix. And so I think there's a total hunger for indie stuff, and especially how much streaming has been booming. And people are starting to go back to the theaters now, but they got very comfortable with streaming stuff. So it leaves a big avenue open with lots of venues for your movie to be seen via streaming options. And plus, and I saw this, like, this sort of blew me away. We have proof that indie movies, there's a huge hunger for them because the movie Terrifier 2, how well that's done. I was like, wow, I can't. First of all, like, when I was watching the movie, this movie is made on $250,000. It's made $7 to $8 million by now. Audiences are eating it up. Now, he's distinguishing himself, the filmmaker Damien Leone is distinguishing himself, is to make something as gory as possible.
Yeah.
So that instant marketing is like people are vomiting and freaking out. And after seeing it, I'm like, I could see that. I mean, I've seen a lot of like crazy horror movies, and this is a level of like French or European, like Fulci or like the French new wave where they're doing Inside and Martyrs, like that crazy of gore for American audiences to see. And I'm like, and they're going and seeing it willingly. And I'm like, this is crazy. But yeah, it just opens up a whole, it's built-in marketing, but it opens up a whole new thing. I think what you're doing is a thing that's like doing this whole interconnected universe and taking like that approach, like these super entertaining side characters and all these other worlds. So there's all kinds of different approaches that you can take, but there is an absolute hunger for indie stuff like this.
Yeah. And that's exciting to think about, because I definitely see it all the time. I mean, even through social media, people are more talking about indie stuff than stuff now. And I think as creators, we're more drawn to being able to produce and make things on our own time and resources and schedule versus having some Hollywood executives say, well, you can't do this, you can't do that, and we don't want this, and you have to get it done by this. You know, like I think that idea of being able to be successful through Hollywood is just out the window. I mean, it's not only in filmmaking, but like with comedy and podcasts and just everything in general, people are doing it. They've got the complete power and control in their hands, producing it themselves. And when they find that audience, it takes off for them. And then maybe they can have some bigger opportunities later down the road through Hollywood or whatever you want in show business. But it's just interesting that we're in that time where we can just, if we can find that audience, like we can find a lot of success out of it just by doing things, you know, at home and then in our own creative way. And I think Strange Films, I like to think that there is an audience out there for it. I mean, I have a select audience that I know really loves what we do, but I think I've still just been trying to break that wall down to get the mass, you know, bigger audience to come my way, because I think if they can just kind of see the vision, see what I'm trying to go for and take these films and watch them, and they're like, oh yeah, there is a consistent theme and excitement and an ambiguous, you know, thing. Imagine if he could step it up another level. I think it's there. I'm still waiting for that audience to hopefully come find it, you know.
Oh yeah. It'll be there. Definitely. It's just a moment of when it catches on for sure.
Yeah.
So one last question for you. There's a lot of challenges that you have to go through when making any films, a lot of hurdles you have to go through. Everything's the odds are not in your favor, as Han Solo would say, but he likes that also. So if it's in your blood, you like that. So how did all this get into your blood?
I think it just was a natural curiosity when I was a kid. I mean, I remember being really young and just obviously obsessed with movies, which a lot of people say, you know, that they were drawn to. But I remember my mom having like a home, you know, camcorder kind of deal, and I was playing around with that and shooting stuff. And then in high school, I took a couple classes that involved with video techniques and whatnot, and I had my own little crappy camera, and I was editing and shooting stuff and editing, making little home movies out of. And then it was really college that spoke to me the most. We had a really great film program and mass communications program that I just just dived into, and I learned really all my skills as far as editing and how to direct. And I took a screenwriting class that really helped me become a better screenwriter and everything. I just kind of looked at film a completely different way. Is, you know, when you're a filmmaker or whatever, or a film even critic or something, like, you're watching movies and it's almost like that main function of just enjoying the movie is off, and you're watching it for, you know, every other reason to watch a movie. And that's when that really awoken in me. And then I just really grew to love the aspects of filmmaking in general, and how to make a movie, and the impact movies make in people's lives and stuff like that. So I think it's just a natural curiosity. I mean, I always was a writer. I remember being as early as like 5 years old and having a little journal, just like stories I was writing and stuff like that. So I think as far as being a natural like writer and storyteller in my own imagination, paired with the curiosity of filmmaking and then finding the love for filmmaking, that was just bound to establish who I am today as far as wanting to be a creative who tells stories, shares, you know, content, and make something that's going to outlive me one day. Yeah. You know, I think that's really cool. Like, I have a son now, and I think it's really neat that, as I'm older, he can watch these things. Even when I'm gone, there's a whole catalog of stuff I've made, and he can just, my dad made that. That's pretty cool. You know, so it's like, I don't know. I think that's really neat.
It is really interesting. Movies are like very, like, helpful, very healing in a lot of ways. They get people through really hard times, and people connect with them, or they can connect with memories from their loved ones and stuff like that through movies. So that's really cool that you brought it up. But it's very true, very true. That's sort of the power of movies. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And I find it, even on a low budget indie scale, when I work with people during the process, and then I'll find out after how much like it meant to them, just enjoying that process. Because I work with a lot of people who this is their first time acting, and they'll tell me they never thought they could, or they never thought they could have so much fun. Or when they see the success of like our film, if it hit a bunch of festivals or something like that, and they're like, wow, I'm a part of that. Like, I get a lot of really cool feedback and compliments from people, just the excitement and enjoyment of being part of what I did. And it's cool because I made that happen. And I try to be really humble about what I do, but when I get that kind of feedback, it's a lot more fulfilling and allows me to be like, okay, like, even if I'm not completely happy with something I make, there's a lot of people who are just over the moon because they got to be a part of it. And that's exciting too. You know, like there's a really powerful human connection you can make through the process of filmmaking. And then once it's done as well.
Yeah. Awesome. That's cool. That's cool. That's very inspiring for like up and coming indie filmmakers as well too, to let them know how much fun it can be and how many good memories you can have from it. Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Awesome. Well, let us know where we can find your work and where and when we can see He Comes to Kill.
Yeah. So you mentioned earlier, strangefilmstudios.com. You can see everything we do as far as our films, our podcasts, our comic books are on there, our merch and all that stuff. But mainly I like to promote our Strange Films YouTube channel. So Strange Film Studios on YouTube. You can watch all of our films on YouTube for free anytime. Like I said, most of them are pretty short. So 5 to 26 minutes is the longest, but He Comes to Kill is coming out on November 19th. We're having our Knoxville Public Theater premiere here. And then right after that, I'm going to post it on YouTube because I want everyone to be able to see it and everything. So you'll be able to find it on YouTube. It's going to have a physical media release as well. So if anyone wants that, they can always reach out to me. And then our Instagram, Strange Film Studios, I like to push that as well. So YouTube and Instagram, our website, it's all there. Give us some love. Check out our work and everything. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Check, go subscribe to the Strange Films YouTube channel. Check out He Comes to Kill, all the other movies available, and other merchandise, comics. I'm going to check out some of the comics. I'm going to pick up a couple of those comics. So awesome. Well, it's so great to have you with us, August. Great talking to you. And many wishes for success in the future. And I hope to see many more sequels coming out of this, as well as other work coming out from you. And thanks again for listening, audience. And until next time, stay on the roads, stay clear of the moors.
Thanks, man.